We'll go ahead and get started. We'll be in 1 Kings chapter 11. 1 Kings chapter 11. We've got several visitors. Glad you're with us. Going into our study. We're finishing up the life of Solomon. In fact, as we remember one of the first things we did when we started into Solomon was we looked at exactly how much, you know, information we have about him, and there's not a lot. 1 Kings chapter 1 through, you know, here about chapter 11 is all we've got. We're going to be in chapter 11 today, so we'll be finishing up the life of Solomon. We'll have a review Wednesday night, and we'll review kind of what we've been studying this quarter, and maybe a little bit more. And then, for the rest of the quarter, through November, we'll be looking at some of the other writings. Job, Psalms, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. That's a lot of material to cover in just a few classes. So it'll be pretty brief and a pretty good overview from a high level for that. But in 1 Kings chapter 11, remember that the kingdom is experiencing, they're in peace, they're experiencing a lot of prosperity. We looked at Solomon's wealth and all the gold and silver and everything that he has multiplied. His horse business, chariot business, as he's buying and selling. All the expansion construction that he's been doing. We'll see a little bit more construction and building that he's doing actually this morning as well. And we saw the foreigners visiting. We saw the visit from the Queen of Sheba. She wanted to come and see his, you know, she'd heard of his wisdom. She wanted to experience that and talk to him and ask him questions. So she did that, and she saw all of his wealth and everything in the kingdom. And apparently it was pretty common for people to come from all around to see, you know, what he's done in the kingdom. So in chapter 11, it says that King Solomon had loved many foreign women along with the daughter of Pharaoh. Remember, he had married the daughter of Pharaoh from Egypt, prince of Egypt, princess, and made her his wife. But he did that with others, Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Sidonians, Hittites. He did all of this from nations concerning which the Lord had said to the sons of Israel, you shall not associate with them, nor shall they associate with you, for they will surely turn your heart away after their gods. And this goes all the way back to Deuteronomy, when Moses was given the law. God warned them, even back then, he said, do not do this. When you have a king, all the way back in Deuteronomy, God knew what was going to happen, what they were going to ask for. And God warned them and told them specifically, do not do this. Do not intermarry with these foreign nations because they will turn your heart away. Solomon, you know, here, you know, whatever phase in his life here, this is, and it does say that as he grew older, they turned his heart away. And he had, in verse 3, 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines. And, indeed, his wives turned his heart away. He did not stay loyal to God. So when, in verse 4, when he was old, his wives turned his heart away after other gods. His heart was not wholly devoted to the Lord his God, as the heart of David his father had been. One of the things that I thought about was, you know, God gave them the king, right? They asked for it, you know, what now, 120 years ago. So, they asked for the king. They had their reasons for asking the key, but God gave them the key. Now, why did God give them the key? This is one of the points at the end on the thoughts, but I'll go ahead and talk about it here. Why? And really, it's just for contemplation. We can't read into that. God doesn't tell us why he did it. But, you know, it's interesting to think about, why did God let them have the key? Why did he give them the keys? God was their king, right? He wanted to be their king. He wanted to be their leader. He wanted them to depend on him. So, you know, just for point of thinking about, why would he do that? Why did he do that? The only thing I can think of is, if you look at the keys that they had up to this point, first it was Saul. Tall, huge, he looked like a massive, you know, figure. He looked like a king. He could go before them, he could ride out before them in battles, and he looked the part. What happened with him? Very quickly, right? Whether or not he was ever wholly devoted to God might be a question, but he left God. He did not honor God's wishes and God's commands in his life. What about David? It's a different story, isn't it? He was a man after God's own heart. He did want to follow God. He honored God. He respected God. He was devoted to God. He was the king. And when you compare them, just from our standpoint, from this side, he was the best one, right? He provided, and God blessed him, gave him victories. But even David, who was seemingly the perfect king, was he perfect? He wasn't. He made mistakes. He made some bad decisions we talked about, especially regarding his sons. He made some poor judgments for his kingdom. Well, look at Solomon. We're about to see more of his downfall here. Solomon, he was humble in the beginning, very humble. God was pleased with his request. And when God spoke to him on these two previous occasions, God was very pleased with Solomon. And what did God do for him to help him? You know, besides giving him the wisdom and the knowledge and the intelligence, you know, that he'd asked for to be able to judge righteously, God heaped blessings upon him like he hadn't done before. This kingdom was more expansive and more wealthy than it had ever been. So, in that sense, we might think that God gave Solomon every opportunity to succeed as being, you know, the best king there could ever be, right? What happened with Solomon? Well, we're going to see more here in his downfall, in his turn away from God because he didn't follow God's commandments. So the question, why did God do this? Why did he give them? What I thought about was maybe God was trying to show that there's not a single person who can be your king and do it perfectly, do it righteously, and stay the course. No one, no matter who we choose, if he looks like a king, even if there's one who's a man after my own heart, he couldn't do it perfectly. And here, Solomon, I'll give you everything earthly to give you every opportunity to succeed. Spiritually speaking, and to succeed. He couldn't do it either. So, where does that leave mankind? Who needs to be our king? Who has to be our king? Who did God send to be that perfect one who could accomplish everything that we needed? Right? Yeah. So, that was just something that came to mind as I was studying this particular lesson. That we have to make, we need to make God our king. No one else can do it. No human. Alright. So let's keep going here. So Solomon is older. He turns his heart away. He goes after all these others. And these wives from these other nations, exactly what God said would happen. They would bring in their foreign influences and their culture and their gods, their worship, would bring it in and lead them away. And it happened with Solomon here in a quite mountainous way. Solomon did what was evil in verse 6. In verse 6, he did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and did not follow the Lord fully as David his father had done. Solomon was on the road. He was on the right path for a long time, it seems. But he has turned away from God. So Solomon then, verse 7, he builds the high places. So here's some of that more building and construction that he does. He goes and he builds the high places for Chemosh, the detestable idol of Moab, on the mountain which is east of Jerusalem, and for Molech, the detestable idol of the sons of Ammon. So he, in part of his building, not only has he done all this, what did Solomon build? What had he built already? He built the temple, right? This large gold, remember, structure, temple where God could be worshipped. I don't know how personal you get with 700 wives, but it's unwise to marry someone who's not a Christian wife to make better decisions sometimes for us to what Solomon is doing now in his life. Verse 9, the Lord was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away from God, the God of Israel who had appeared to him twice. What do we know about God and his attitude and the way he sees, these foreign gods, these other gods that people worship? You know, if you think about it, consider if we agree that there is one true and living God, created the world, and there is no other God, right? From his vantage point, when mankind manufactures, cuts down the tree, some of the wood's used for fire, some of it we use to build an idol. What is the God who created everything? And man here is manufacturing and making his own idol for himself and bowing down to it and making that his God. What an insult. What a slap in the face. Look at everything that God did. What is it that God says about himself? Exactly. Exodus 20, chapter 5. And this goes back to when God was giving them their law, there at Mount Sinai. This is what he says. He says, "You shall not worship them or serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers of the children on the third and fourth generations of those who hate me." Doesn't it make sense that God is a jealous God? Because, it's just an insult to who he is, a total lack of acknowledgement and respect, for sure, that he who made everything and did everything, and then we decide to manufacture our own little things over here. Right? Well, so God was angry with Solomon because his heart was turned away to the Lord God of Israel, who'd appeared to him twice. God's spoken to him on two occasions here. And what were those two occasions? Very favorable in Solomon's life here. Very favorable. God was very pleased with him. God's going to talk to him again. This third time, not so favorable. In fact, very much against what Solomon is doing. So, God had, verse 10, he'd commanded him concerning this thing that he should not go after other gods, but he did not observe what the Lord had commanded. So Solomon's going against God. So God says to him in verse 11, "Because you have done this, and you have not kept my covenant and my statutes, which I have commanded you, I will surely tear the kingdom from you and will give it to your servant. What was the promise that God had made when Solomon, and one of the, I think it was the first time that God appeared to him? Remember what he had said? If you do all my commandments, then what? I'll establish your throne. Well, here it is. Solomon did not do as God had commanded, and he's going to tear the kingdom away from him. Nevertheless, verse 12, he's not going to do it during Solomon's life. Solomon's going to continue reigning. It's not necessarily going to be all pleasant anymore, but he's going to continue reigning, and it's not going to be until his son takes the throne that God's going to tear it away. But he is going to continue with a part of the kingdom in his name, you might say, because of the sake of David and because of the temple in Jerusalem. In verse 13, he says, I will not tear it away, all the kingdom, but I will give one tribe to your son for the sake of David and for the sake of Jerusalem, which I have chosen. So everything's going to change. Once Solomon dies, everything's going to change. God is, part of it's going to be taken away, most of it, almost all of it's going to be taken away from Solomon and his family. But God will keep a part of it there because of the promises that he's made. So for the rest of Solomon's life, God raises up adversaries to be against him. So it's not as peaceful as it was through most of his reign. Adversaries come up, and some of the enemies, old enemies, sort of rise back up. There was one. Hadad, in verse 14 and beyond, Hadad became an adversary to Solomon. Hadad was an Edomite. David and Joash specifically had gone down to Edom in their time and had killed, and it says, had destroyed and struck down every male in Edom. So he had pretty much, you know, taken out Edom, in that event. Well, Hadad was young at the time, and he escaped with a few others, it seems like, and they fled to Egypt, and they took refuge there. Well, in Egypt, the Pharaoh there, the king there, took him in, gave him everything he needed, set him up, and really, he found a lot of favor, Hadad did, in his sight. So the Pharaoh even gave him a wife from his queen's sister, right? And just, you know, took care of him. You know, he was an honored guest there in Egypt. Well, when Hadad finds out that David's dead, and he wants to come back into Edom and back toward Israel, and so he does that. He asked the Pharaoh to let him go, and Pharaoh's response was, well, I've given you everything. He said, yeah, you have, but I want to go down there. So he goes, and he begins causing trouble for Solomon. And in addition to him, we also have mention of Rezin, who also causes him trouble. And he was up in Damascus, and from there, he was an adversary in verse 25. He was an adversary to Israel all the days of Solomon, along with the evil that Hadad did. So Rezin up in the northern part, Hadad, if he stayed around the Edom and southern part, were both causing him trouble. All right. Well, we meet one other player who becomes almost one of the central characters here as we turn the page from 1 Kings chapter 11 into chapter 12 and beyond. We won't get into that this quarter, but he comes on the scene here, and that is that of Jeroboam, the son of Nebat, and Zeruah. So Jeroboam finds favor in the sight of Solomon. Solomon sees him, thinks highly of him, puts him in charge of some of the labor forces that are going on, specifically the sons of Joseph, Ephraim and Manasseh. So he puts Jeroboam, he has a position. However, something happens that turns Solomon totally against him, and that is Ahijah the prophet. Ahijah the prophet meets Jeroboam. Ahijah the prophet puts on a new cloak. He's got on a new, totally new tunic. And as he comes and he meets Jeroboam, this is what he, this is in, he says, verse 30. Ahijah takes hold of this new cloak, which is on him, and he tears it into 12 pieces. He takes it off, 12 pieces. And he says to Jeroboam, take for yourself 10 pieces. For thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, behold, I will tear the kingdom out of the hand of Solomon and give you 10 tribes. Right? And he clarifies in verse 32, but he will have one tribe for the sake of my servant David, for the sake of Jerusalem, the city which I have chosen from all the tribes of Israel. So, and the reason is it because they have forsaken God, they've worshipped, following all these other gods, and they have not walked in my ways, doing what is right in my sight, and observing my statutes and my ordinances, as his father David did. So why is this going to happen? Why is God going to tear the kingdom up and split it? Because they have left God. They have turned away from God. So this is Jeroboam, the prophecy of Ahijah about Jeroboam, what's going to happen. Well, guess who hears about the prophecy? Solomon. Solomon doesn't like it, obviously, and he tries to kill Jeroboam. And does not succeed in that, but definitely makes the attempt. All right, so he says, verse 36, but to his son, Solomon's, that is, I will give one tribe that my servant David may have a lamp always before me in Jerusalem, the city where I have chosen for myself. So, verse 37, he says, I will take you, this is still to Jeroboam, and you shall reign over whatever you desire, and you shall be the king over Israel. Now, notice what God says through the prophet. Notice what he says to Jeroboam. We know the rest of the story of Jeroboam, but look what God says to him. Here in the beginning, Jeroboam's more of a nobody than a somebody, but he's going to be quite the somebody and quite the prominent figure. Look what he says to Jeroboam. Then it will be, verse 38, that if you listen to all that I command you and walk in my ways and do what is right in my sight by observing my statutes and my commandments as my servant David did, notice he didn't say as my servant Solomon, as my servant David did, then I will be with you and build you an enduring house as I built for David, and I will give Israel to you. So, here to Jeroboam, and we know what choices he made, but he was given the same opportunities was given to Saul, as to David, to Solomon. If you will do what I say, if you will follow me, then I will establish you, you'll have a part in this always, you'll be blessed. So, but Solomon sought thereafter to put Jeroboam to death and tried to kill him. But Jeroboam fled down to Egypt to take refuge and to Shishak there in Egypt. Then the rest of the Acts of Solomon, whatever he did, they're written in the book of the Acts of Solomon, so there's other books that are we do not have. And Solomon reigned in Jerusalem for the 40 years. He slept with his fathers, was buried in the city of his father David, and his son Rehoboam reigns in his place. So that's the life and the deeds of Solomon. And, we'll think about some of the things here for the rest of the time. When you think about Solomon, you know, one of the things that comes to my mind is opportunity lost. You know, look at everything that was given to him. I mean, he was everything, every opportunity, everything that a king could possibly need or even want, God gave to him because of the nature, because of the character that Solomon showed as being, wanting to judge righteously and to lead God's people. But it was completely wasted on Solomon. Think about our lives. We may not think we measure up to what Solomon's been given, but look at what God has done for us, for me. And, you know, as we get toward the end of our life, we want to say, we want to look back and say, this was an opportunity lost. We need to recognize that earlier on in our lives, when we have the ability and the means to do something for the Lord and to not turn away from it, to work for Him, to follow Him, and to stay the course. You know, one of the things that it does say that it was in his later years as he grew older that Solomon turned away from God. You know, what a shame, what an awful thing is to live your life and follow God for part of that life, or maybe most of our life, and then turn away, allow things later on in life to lead us astray. You know, things can happen that take us away from God. That we allow to come into our lives that will take us away, just like happened to Solomon. He invited those things in, all those wives, and they just led him completely away from God. Don't let the first part of our lives be for nothing. Stay the course. Be faithful. Till the end, I encourage us and all of us. And the last point there, the commandments from hundreds of years earlier were violated. Go back and look at Deuteronomy 17 for a second. This is where God gave all the commandments for the kings. We mentioned about it earlier. He starts in verse 14. When you enter, this is before they went into the land, the promised land. When you enter the land, he says, and you possess it, live in it, and you say, I will set a king over me like all the nations who are around me. So here's the king. You shall surely set a king over you whom the Lord your God chooses, one from among your countrymen. You shall set his king over yourselves. You may not put a foreigner over yourselves. So he keeps going through here. Verse 16, he shall not multiply horses for himself. You know, that was one thing that Solomon did a lot of. He shall not cause the people to return to Egypt to multiply horses. Solomon specifically went to Egypt and bought horses and traded up toward the north of his kingdom. He shall not multiply wives in verse 17, or else his heart will turn away. Verse 18, when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, what did he want the kings to do? He shall write for himself a copy of this law on a scroll in the presence of the Levitical priests. It shall be with him, and he shall read it all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God by carefully observing all the words of the law and the statutes, that his heart may not be lifted up above his countrymen, and that he may not turn aside from the commandments to the right or the left. So, you think in that later part of Solomon's life that we're talking about, do you think he was reading the law every day? Do you think he was reading God's commands every day like God wanted him to? No. You know, you know, one of the things that happens is, you know, in a person's life that's sad is that we just grow complacent. We don't stay dedicated, you know, and as that happens, then we don't have God before us all the time thinking about that and what happens. Well, if we're not dedicated and we're becoming complacent, then what happens? We do what we want to do, right? It's pretty natural. We just do what we want to do. And generally speaking, that's contrary to God's law. And when God's not in the forefront of our minds, then, you know, that's what's going to happen over time. The last thing that I thought of and was with relationships. I kind of mentioned it already. You know, with relationships, there's nothing more close and personal, you know, here than relationships and marrying. We have to be very, you know, cognizant of that and think about that, because this is the quickest and the fastest way for one to turn away from God. If that person that we're thinking about, we're going to marry, the influence there is just very, very powerful. And, you know, you get into a lot of situations that, you know, you have to deal with that you may not want to, that you never really envision having to deal with. You know, well, she's staying home or he's staying home and I'm going to church. You know, I'm going to service worship. And, you know, there's a divide, there's a separation already, in that. And then the things that he or she are participating in that I'm not going to, that I don't want to. You can do that for a while. I guess you can do that for all your life. But is that what you want to do? Does that sound pleasant to be divided and not be wholly committed to each other? So something to think about, as we teach our classes and go forth and, you know, teaching our kids and each other. Any questions or comments or anything? Yeah, that's a good point. So Al's point is a good one. We talk about God being insulted with these other gods. Well, in our time right now, I think it's going to be coming, a lot more here in the future, maybe in the near future, the distant future. We don't think so much about foreign gods, idols, per se, that, you know, we pick up and build up and manufacture for ourselves. But today, right now in our lives, you know, what is it that takes that role. Well, it's wherever our hearts lead us. It's whatever desires we have. And those things become our gods. Those things are what we live for, what we dedicate our time towards, what we want to do. And, you know, that goes back to thinking, you know, if God is not right there before us, in front of us, daily, and God knew that this would happen. He told the king needs to do what? He needs to copy the law, and he needs to read it daily. He needs to read it. He needs to be a part of it. Solomon, in these later years, he just did everything that God said not to do. Think, you know, God's specifics here, God knew what was going to happen. God knew what the tendencies, what the temptations were going to be. And he put them forth, you know, hundreds of years earlier here in Deuteronomy, when he was given the law. Don't let this happen. Here's the warning. And Solomon fell. He fell right into all of that and was led away. All right. Any other comments? All right. So, Wednesday we will, we'll do a review, and then, the Sunday after that we'll start, I think it's Job, if I remember right. We'll do Job, and then Psalms and Proverbs through the rest of the month. I will be gone in November. I've got to go on a business trip. So, once I'm gone, Tracy's going to be taking my place, helping out with Greg. Thank you for your attention and for your comments.